You know it's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe iced range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. On the line with me, I have Seth Cox, and this is an all-Cardinals show following probably the best week that we're going to throw. Might be the best game the Cardinals have had all year. Coming off of a Sunday night football win in Seattle, beating the two-time NFC champion Seahawks 39-32 to take a three-game lead in the division with seven games left, improving the Cardinals to 7-2 overall, sending Seattle to 4-5 overall, and combined with the St. Louis Rams loss to the Chicago Bears over the weekend as well, the Cardinals lead everyone in the division by at least three games with seven games left. So basically, we can, barring disaster by the Cardinals, we can probably punch their ticket as the NFC West champs. But this is the All Cardinals Show. We're going to talk about the game. My goodness, and it was one heck of a game. It was a great Sunday night football game. It was exactly what you would want to see. There was drama. The Cardinals came out hot. They gave us a scare, but they rallied and came back. There was dancing. There was pelvic thrusts. And it was a little bit different for us personally as we got to get together. Seth had us over, so my wife and I were over at Seth's house with some other good friends, and it was a blast. And there were some who definitely enjoyed the ambiance and the adult beverages. So it was quite an evening, to say the least, between the company, the game, and then the alcohol that some were consuming. Yes, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah, and I wasn't one, so I had to write a paper.
Well,
I had to start during the game because the game decided to be a 4-hour.
Oh my gosh, that was one of the longest games. So let's go ahead and get started. So just goodness, I couldn't believe it. I was so excited. Just the fact that the Cardinals did exactly what they needed to. It was a statement game. It was on the road. They crushed the hopes of the Seahawks. They're now one of six teams that are 4-5 and currently battling for a wild card spot. There are six teams at 4-5. Right now, it's the Atlanta Falcons who would hold the number six seed, the final wild card spot in the NFC at 6-3. And then there, as I said, a half a dozen 4-5 teams. The Rams and the Seahawks are included. But Arizona came out and did it. They needed to get another. They needed to get a win over Seattle. This was the perfect time to do it because it just said, no, we are better. This is our division to be had. And to do it in a fashion where they took such a commanding lead early on, and then also, and it was, I expected a game like this. This is exactly what I expected. Not necessarily the but that sort of game where the Cardinals, who are very good offensively, they pull out early. They get a lead. Seattle being the talented and tough team that they are, rallying, making it a close game, and then the Cardinals making plays in the fourth to do that. So I don't know if this could, aside from the surprise of the 2008 playoff run, I don't think we've seen a more satisfying win by the Cardinals that I can remember.
No, and definitely not in the regular season, because even when you go back through, you know, the Warner years, I mean, there were miserable losses more than maybe season-defining win. I think at this point it's clearly a season-defining win, but obviously the season's not over, so, you know, we'll find out how defining it actually is at the end of the season. But, you know, when you go back to the Warner years, there were great games, memorable games, but really, I mean, most of them came in the playoffs, right? I mean, Atlanta.
It was like basically every single playoff win, the beating the Falcons, beating the turning Jake, basically ruining Jake Delhomme for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
And then the Eagles
NFC
win.
Yeah, those.
And then they have the historic game the next year when they beat out Green Bay in the playoffs. But you know that there was a different time because.
And those were all postseason games. So those had they were obviously clearly more important in the grand scheme of things because it was win or go home. Whereas this was, if you lose, you're going to be disappointed because, and you and I have talked about it off the air, but I don't think we've ever definitively said it on the air, but we both truly believe that this team was better than Seattle. And
yes.
I think even though Seattle is not as good offensively as they have been in the past, their defense is still very talented. We saw that during the game. And so what ends up happening is you finally, as a team, you finally have kind of gotten over that speed bump. And now, like you said, barring one of the
barring where we have to rely on Matt Barkley like we had to rely on Ryan Lindley a year ago. But no, if this doesn't turn into a Matt Barkley year, the Cardinals are on. And really, we should change the expectation. This, now we should be looking at as fans at this Cardinals team as number one, number two, is fighting for a bye and whether they will be home field or not. Now, the two-game lead that Carolina currently has over them will be, you know, that's going to be hard to overcome. But
because Carolina's
schedule is awful. Oh, I know. But you think about it. If you had to pick at the beginning of the season, hey, in the NFC Championship game, if you're going to, we're going to put the fiction, you're going to play it in Carolina. I don't think there was a single soul who would say, nah, I don't like that. No, that's exactly what you said. Yeah, totally. Because Green Bay at Lambeau in January, as bad as they've looked recently, that's not a team you want to play then, because they've done it there. This Aaron Rodgers, he's a superstar. And as great as Cam Newton is, as much of a star as he is, it still kind of looks like what the Cardinals were a year ago, where it's just sort of like, I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it.
Yeah, and when you look at overall the game and the outcome and just kind of how it's, you know, shaped the what everybody expects, I think when we started the year, you and I talked about what we thought as a successful season is if everybody is healthy, they need to go to the NFC Championship. When you sit back and you look, obviously that's still a successful season, but as things sit today, you know, as the two seed in the NFC, I don't know how that works based on everything, but they're the two seed right now in the NFC over Minnesota, and that will be, you know, figured out in a week or, you know, 2 weeks from now. But you look at that, and you look at the fact that, like you said, Green Bay is really not good right now. Seattle's not even in the playoffs. So basically all the teams that you were worried about come January aren't even really in the picture. So now, and this isn't the slight Carolina at all, or Minnesota for that matter. This isn't a slight. But when you just look at talent, when you look at talent on the roster from top to bottom, you have to look at Arizona and say, okay, that's the most talented team in the NFC. You know, we talked about it last week, their front seven on defense is probably at league average. But everywhere else, good to very good to great. And when you look at that, how many other teams can say that? How many teams can look at and say, our weakest spot is average comparative to the rest of the league? Well, and everywhere else, we're better than the average.
And when you look at the team, I mean, say what you want of who they played, but over the course of the season, but and I did tweet this out. I was like, well, this is a signature win, but at the end of the day, so are the Cardinals? Are people going to start looking at the Cardinals? And say, so who they've played? They beat Seattle, but look, Seattle's just a 4-5 team. They still haven't really beaten anybody over 500 yet. That aside, it hit me the other day as I was doing some game prep for some previews, and I looked at some of the statistics. I didn't realize it. Now, I knew that they were top 10 in offense, and I knew that they were top 10 in defense. But it wasn't just that. It's the aggregate. As you keep looking at the little subgroups, the Cardinals are in the top 10 in scoring offense. They are the top 10 in scoring defense. They are in the top 10 in just offense in general, which is based on yards gained. They are in the top 10 in defense overall in yards allowed. They are in the top 10 in rushing offense. They are in the top 10 in passing offense. They're in the top 10 of rush defense, and they're the top 10 in passing defense. They literally do, like, now aside on the offense and those two sides of the ball, they literally do everything well. Every single part. They do well. They stop the run. They stop the pass. They stop teams from scoring. They score points. They move the ball. They move the ball, rushing the ball, and they move the ball, passing the ball. They do everything well right now.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we talked about before the show, but is so important, this was the first time when they got down, but they didn't stop running the football. Bruce just said, you know what, I'm not, and I think that's growth as a play caller and as a coach from the losses, you know, at home against St. Louis and in Pittsburgh, that instead of getting, oh crap, we're behind, let's, you know, Carson, 55 throws, you know, they still ran the ball 33 times in the game. And I think only like five or six were at the end of the game to try to milk the clock. It wasn't even like they were going, you know, way, way over. So.
But even still, it was still pretty unbalanced. It was, you know, it wasn't near that. It was, you know, they dropped back to pass 51 times, and they did what was essentially 30 actual running plays because they had the kneel downs at the end of the game. So it wasn't the same balance, but it wasn't as nearly as exaggerated, but they definitely threw the ball a lot. I mean, you look at a game,
but that was also because they ran so many plays.
Yes.
I mean, anything over 70 in a game is a lot of plays, and they ran 87. Even if you take the kneel downs out at the end, which was three, that's just insane. Amount of plays, 84 plays.
That's Chip Kelly. Yes, Chip Kelly, yeah. Territory.
That, I mean, that's not Bruce Arians' offense. That's not, and he's not, you know, obviously going to complain because the results were great. But that was a combination of Seattle was really shaky. They had, I think, we talked about before, 13 penalties in the game.
14.
And 14, yeah. And then they had the turnovers, and they played. And this is a credit to the Cardinals because they forced a lot of that, but they played just dumb football a lot of times. I mean, just dumb, bad football. And, you know, and I think the Cardinals' ability to do so many things well is part of what caused that.
Well, and you look at it, you know, all those penalties, there was some stupid stuff going on, but you look at it, the reason, why were there those holding penalties? Because the Seattle offensive line is terrible. And it's even so bad as that they're so bad that they're asking Jimmy Graham to play in line and block. He's not good at it. That's the only reason why they're doing it is because their offensive line is just so bad.
Yeah, I mean, they can't even use him correctly, like you said, since their offensive line is off. But I thought we saw some of the warts come out as Seattle clawed back into the game and even took the lead for that short amount of time. And you know, obviously those are what we've talked about throughout the year. There's still protection issues, which I was slightly surprised at how bad the protection issues were at times. A couple times we saw it was Chris Johnson not making blocks, but Bobby Massey had
bad game.
Bad game, but he had two very, very big mental errors. And that's something that, you know, Bruce Arians talks about all the time. But, you know, physical errors are going to happen. And, you know, in any sport you play at any level, you've been told by a coach, I can accept your physical errors, but I cannot accept your mental errors. And that's what happened.
Case in point, past two seasons, Ted Larson, Paul Fonseca. Just you put those names that they started every game, basically, and why? They knew their assignments. They got beat a lot.
But they got beat because, yeah, they weren't physically good enough, whereas you look at the other one, and
Free runner. You can't have free runners at Carson Palmer.
No, and Cooper's, I mean, you know, not to bag on Cooper again this week, but, I mean, he missed a couple, too, coming through the middle. And that's going to happen because I don't know why it's still happening, but yeah, in a game of this magnitude, in that instance, and I talked about it when you were here, you know, I think the play that Jerron Brown made where he was able to stab that ball on a third and six or seven and Palmer threw it behind him. I mean, it was a bad pass because Palmer didn't get his feet set because he was really in a bad spot mentally where he was, you know, just not setting himself, which is expected. Like I said, he got murdered for a lot of the game. And so, it ended up being just a huge, huge play in the game because I think what it did for Palmer, too, is say, okay, all right, my guys are still out here making plays. I got to settle down. I got to make some plays. Because after the back-to-back sack fumbles, it was kind of dark right there for a second.
It was a moment of this team is going to fall apart.
Yes. And it was something that we have been concerned about with this team. You know, everybody talks about the Cleveland Browns game. If you lost that game to the Cleveland Browns, they're basically, canceled the season. The Cleveland's not a good team. I mean, and that's what the difference is. You know, as bad as Seattle is right now, they're still two games out of the playoffs. It's not like they're, it's not like they're Cleveland where they're already looking at the draft, and they're already, they're putting Johnny Manziel in to see what he has, to see if he can be type thing. You know, they haven't given up on the season. So coming back down from Seattle, in Seattle, where that crowd, turns the defense into a feeding frenzy, and to be able to control the game from, about 10 minutes in the fourth quarter on, that's got to be the best thing that they've done all year. And that comes back to what we started with. That can be a statement game. Like, look, we as a team are good enough to beat anybody. And no matter the situation, no matter how bad it gets, we're still good enough to put our 11 guys out there and make plays when they matter and turn the game around.
And that's, if we're going to start talking about the good, I think that is the greatest good that we've seen progressively over the course of the season. This Cardinals team has looked early on like front runners, like a good front running team, which, by the way, that's what the Kurt Warner Cardinals were. Kurt Warner was not a particularly great rally quarterback, but he was good at getting you out, getting you some points, and then leading the team to the win. We saw that early on from the Cardinals this year. But the first game where they saw adversity was St. Louis, and they couldn't handle it. But they were basically one or two plays from a win, despite multiple errors. Then we saw Monday Night Football. We saw progression. They had control of the game that got tight, and then they made a play at the last minute. Then we saw Cleveland, where they turned it on. It was a tale of two halves, and they basically shut Cleveland down and turned it around. Tony Jefferson told me, he said that that was the highlight of the season, because they were in a bad place, and then they flipped the switch and they turned it around. Those things, I think what we saw from in that Seattle game was the result of the early failure. Maybe even say the failure in Pittsburgh, but then the almost failure in against Baltimore, and then the turnaround in Cleveland. And this team has learned, basically, you know, the narrative that Coach Arians has been giving us over those games. Guess what? It came to pass. It wasn't just coach talk. It was actual. It happened. They learned what they needed to learn, and they had the belief. They saw, oh crap, this is what happened. When we don't make plays, when there are plays there and we don't make it, we fell behind. Okay, we made plays when we had to, clutch moment. They turn it around and take the game away. And now they made plays early. They looked like it was going to die. It was going to fall apart. And then this team, I think, just established themselves in the locker room as, hey, we're winning now. I think they're not going to lose again. They have given themselves the belief in the locker room is that we shouldn't lose again.
Right, and this team needed that ability to see that they are, I don't want to say dominant, because we've seen them be dominant, but they're able to come back and win games and beat good teams. And, you know, maybe
not only dominant, but tough. And that's the thing.
Yeah. And maybe we in Arizona are still, overthinking Seattle and whether they're good or not. But like I said, I still think they're good. So, I think also on the good thing was you had Carson Palmer rebound from another poor goal line decision where a lot of people said, oh, there's Carson again. There's old Carson Palmer that nobody wanted, and for the next, because that was the second drive of the game. From then on out, he was MVP Carson Palmer.
He was
probably the second or third best quarterback in the NFL this year.
So let's talk about the good specifically. Good, okay, we've got the bounce back. Good, Carson Palmer. Holy crap. you saw on a national stage, and probably with the game that he had and the way he brought the team back, I don't think anyone has seen, like on a national stage, that anyone has seen that out of Carson Palmer since he was a Bengal and since basically 10 years ago.
No, I mean, nobody expected that. He's been Jay Cutler or Matt Stafford. I mean, that's who he's been. He's a guy that puts up big numbers that, is consistently in that, why doesn't his team win more? Is he somebody that, is it his fault? Is it their fault? What's going on? And I mean, that's always been fair. Let's be honest. Like, dude has never won a playoff game. In Arizona's first year, he threw, 22 interceptions.
He did.
But he's put up nice numbers. They tweeted out today or the other day in the last, 24 games, he's won 20 and thrown 50 touchdowns. He's played extremely well. I think we as not fans, but we as the general public can look at it and say, okay, and granted, Yeah, we know. He still hasn't done it in playoffs. Well, let's see if it happens this year, obviously. But I think we can look at the Cardinals with Carson Palmer and say they have enough around him that, and he's playing at such a high level, that he should be able to take them into that deep playoff run that we've talked about.
Another good that you can look at, Michael Floyd. Now, there's the bad to that. He got hurt at the end of the game, and his status for this week is a little bit up in the air. But Michael Floyd, now that he's healthy and kind of found a rhythm, and really, if you look back, dating back to that Chicago game where you said his body language was awful, he has become dominant. He is, I mean, and they're trusting him down the field, which is something they say. Hey, he beat Joe Hayden. He beat those Seattle cornerbacks like a drum. He beat Kerry Williams. He just flat out beat Richard Sherman. You know, there aren't many receivers who can do that. And that's the Michael Floyd that people wanted to see. A passionate, tough, hardworking, good routes on Michael Floyd. And it just seems, he was about to turn the corner. Consistently we'd come back, whether it's a lingering injury or here it is. It's the hamstring again. He's had hamstring issues every single year he's been in the league. But my goodness, Michael Floyd was a force. And they weren't afraid of anyone on that Seattle defense.
No, and I think what it is that you have your number one receiver still in Larry Fitzgerald. And what has happened is you now have the ability to get big plays out of either Michael Floyd or John Brown. You know, John Brown started the year as the big play guy, and he really, you know, kind of peaked in that Pittsburgh game, and then he's had some injury issues since then. But then what happened? Not a problem. Who steps in? You know, Michael Floyd, he's filling the John Brown role, but it's not even the John Brown role. It's just that we need somebody that can make plays down the field. Because we have Larry Fitzgerald. We have, you know, the Arizona Cardinals have Larry Fitzgerald, where all he's going to do is he's going to make the big catches. He's the one that you're going to go to on third down six, you know, when you need to go 6 yards. He's not the guy you're going to go to on first and 10 when you're going to take a shot down. Deal.
No,
and that's okay.
Yes,
and
he doesn't beat one-on-one coverage anymore unless it's a linebacker. But for some reason, every time there's zone coverage, he seems to be wide open, somewhere.
It's still because he's the only one that runs good routes on the team. I mean, John Brown has improved immensely in his rookie season, but you know, Michael Floyd wins with excellent body positioning and physicality and the ability to outwork everybody, or the ability to outleap and out, you know, to get the ball in the air and snatch it. And then you look at, you know, obviously John Brown is basically the smaller version of Michael Floyd. They play a very similar game in terms of what, you know, where they went at.
But at the same time, what I like about Michael Floyd in that role a little bit more is that John Brown, we have rarely seen him down the – hasn't been a lot, but down the field where he has to make a play on the ball. And that's because of his size. He is best because he gets separation and you just have to drop the ball to then he gets it. Michael Floyd, though, he doesn't need much separation. He goes up and makes plays on balls, which is also very nice to see. He will go up and it's unfortunate because we've seen now a couple of times it's been his fault, but he has been robbed of some significant statistics. It seems that he's probably lost 300 yards worth of plays because of penalties. He lost another big one on Sunday as well because of a penalty. Now, a couple of those this year have been because he gets flagged for OPI because he is prone to do that. Because of his size, and it gets noticed. He gets noticed when he interviews because he's big.
And then the other thing is, like on Sunday, the flag was because he lined up wrong, and that was something you remember, you know, as much as everybody hated Ken Wisenhunt, you remember the reason Ken Wisenhunt wasn't going to play was...
He had no idea where he was supposed to be.
Yeah, he didn't know where he was supposed to line up. And so, you know, that still comes into play every once in a while. So, you know, but I think that's what you have to like is that you have, I mean, I don't think anybody noticed, but John Brown didn't have a cap.
Not a single one. Not a single one. And I when they showed a statistic, they showed a graphic of what Larry did that game. I'm like, wait, what? He had 10 catches for 130. That was the quietest 10-130 I've ever heard of. Ever.
Yep, and that's what I, you know, when people say, oh, look at Michael Floyd's emerging as, you know, the guy. He's the big play guy. He's taken John Brown's role. But when you look at it overall, the offense still flows because of what Fitz is able to do. Like you said, zone coverage from the slot. He's able to block so well, and he's able to do so much in terms of just keeping the offense on time. He basically becomes, you know, a pseudo running back in what he does because, you know, 10 catches for 130 yards isn't really
he's
a lot.
You know what he is? He's a really good tight end. That's how he's being used. Exactly. He's a really good tight end.
He is their tight end, basically, now. So, and that's fine. Like, that's great because what he's able to do.
And Larry Fitzgerald Sr., who has complained about being a glorified tight end, this is what Bruce Arians, I'm sure, envisioned for Fitz. He's playing that Hines Ward role, and guess what? If he stays healthy and if they have the right tools around them, he can put up really big numbers.
Yeah. Well, you look at it, and this is what they are trying to do is create Arians is creating that Pittsburgh offense where it was, you know, Mike Wallace and the other name is escaping, Hines Ward, like you said. So, you know, and Hines Ward was the guy that kind of caught all the footballs, and Mike Wallace was the guy that had, you know, 1,300 yards on 70 catches or 10 touchdowns. And that's fine because that's what they're supposed to be. You know, that's what Michael Floyd and John Brown are doing is they're the big play guys. And right now, it's Floyd's turn, and so that maybe that flips, maybe it doesn't, but it's going to be interesting to watch going forward. So
another good you have to look at the play this the big plays that we saw out of the depth of the Cardinals, namely Jerron Brown, a guy who, at least on the offensive side of the ball, has been very unreliable. You point back to last year, that drop in the end zone kind of turned the tide, kind of really changed things for the Cardinals in Seattle a year ago. Jerron Brown, out there only for 17 plays, and only out there pretty much because Michael Floyd left the game with a hamstring injury. And his three catches, every single one of them, was absolutely crucial. Now, we can all question the fact, what was Carson Palmer doing, tested, trying to get the ball down the field on one throw to Jerron Brown and recovered by Richard Sherman. But Jerron Brown made perhaps one of the game-saving plays when Sherman tipped that ball, which easily could have turned into an interception. Jerron snatches out of the air. The third down play, which they badly needed that first down, and he goes back and reaches out and makes that amazing grab. Jerron stepping up was huge because we know he does things on special teams. He's very good on special teams. But what he hasn't shown anything as any sort of consistency on the football field as terms of receiver, and we got it.
Yeah, and like you said, Jerron was huge. Another guy that I thought was huge in the game and the guy that we talk about every week, especially when the lights come on, is obviously Tyrann Mathieu. Obviously the bad dropped interception.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's going to be the first one to complain about it. But, you know, the dropped interception hurt. But overall, I think you look at what he does for that defense. The way he's able to flip between corner, play, safety, blitz, drop into zone coverage, and then he manned up on Jimmy Graham as well. So he does so much for that defense, and now he's able to. He's in a comfort state in a role where he really can't be used incorrectly because he's just so dominant everywhere he goes. I thought he was just dominant in the game, and that was a big boost for the Cardinals defensively, because I think he really came out and helped clean up some of the issues they were having at times.
Here's another quiet but very important good. Drew Butler punted a heck of a game. Granted, it was only three punts, but there were no Drew Butler punts. if you guys know what I'm talking about, he had a very good game. There he was.
Yep, and people don't know this probably, but they kept the ball out of the hands of Tyler Lockett, who is probably right now the most dynamic return man in the NFL. So that was huge for him to be able to do that. And I think overall you have to be impressed with the entire special teams unit because they were able to kind of put it all together and keep a very solid Seattle special teams in check, while also continuing to, keep the Cardinals in good field position the entire game.
And then I think the one last really good we can point to was, you were calling for this play, three or four times previous, but the speed draw that they ran to Andre Ellington, which put the game with that touchdown. Great work by Andre staying in bounds. Great work making the guy miss, and great play call. And it makes you say, and you were rather precious with saying the speed draw has been there. And Seth, I can attest to this. Seth said it several times in the same drive. They should go for that play.
Right, and one of the things is when you're getting killed with blitzes, especially blitzes up the middle, something like that where you create a lane, and you show pass, and the blitz comes, and you're able to get a quick handoff in, and really just beat the defense that way, and it worked so well. And that was one of the things that I talked about with Arians, and his creativity and his willingness to change, is that that's not something we've seen this year, and clearly he saw that they were bringing pressure, and they knew that they had to bring pressure because, that's when Carson tends to struggle, is if he has pressure at his feet. So let's bring pressure, and they brought it, and they ended up finding a way to beat it finally after, two sacks and two fumbles. And it ended up being okay because that big play basically put the game away. Yeah, there was a shot kind of at the end type of thing, but it was basically
a shot in the dark, basically. It was a shot, but it was a shot in the dark. They really didn't have any hope unless, and I joked about it, it's like, wait, Brandon Bostic, no, good, he's not active. So there was no way to ruin it. There was no way to pull a Green Bay there at the end like they did in the playoffs and just ruin that. Now, Patrick Peterson, now granted, they don't have any big-time receivers. Patrick Peterson was completely ignored. Russell Wilson threw one pass in his direction, and it was incomplete.
Teams really have no desire to throw at him, though, right now, either. Partially because Jerod is, I don't know if he's hurt or if something's going on with him, but he has struggled lately. I think he gave up like 130 or something crazy like that. And a lot of it was on one play.
Yes. Well, but, and that's we'll turn to the bad. They gave up some big plays. They did. They gave up some big plays. Paul Richardson had the 40-yard catch. Jimmy Graham had a 30-yarder. Doug Baldwin had a 33-yarder. I mean, Doug Baldwin went 7 for 134. That's a lot of yards. And a lot of those came against Gerard. Some of those are he did get beat. But, I mean, you can't really, as a number two corner, you can't get much better than what you've gotten, Gerard. And, he did come back from the injury. So I wonder if he's not 100%. But he gives you more pluses, usually, than he does negative plays. You saw a couple of the positive plays where he knocked the ball out. He's leveled a guy, a receiver, and knocked the ball away. But that was definitely one of the things, because they gave up some big plays defensively, which kept them sort of in the game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the two concerns I think you have coming out of that game are the obviously blunders of the offensive line. Hopefully, because a lot of it was mental, they can be coached up and fixed. And then obviously the fact that they're still really not getting to the quarterback. Yeah, they had some pressures, but a lot of those pressures just turned into plays that Russell Wilson made. And then you have, kind of, like you said, those big, quote-unquote, big plays that Seattle made that really kept them in the game more than they should have been. Because before all of the turnovers and all the other stuff by the Cardinals, you remember what happened was Seattle came back by taking the ball down the field and scoring almost to end the half. The Cardinals, I think, got a field goal to end the half, and then getting the ball back and going down and scoring again. So that, that was what kind of put Seattle back on track, and then the turnovers happened where Seattle was able to take the lead. But before that, it was more of the fact that Seattle was able just to continue to move the ball and make big plays, and then, kind of put Arizona on their heels and not really get any not get any pressure, and that's kind of where I thought some of the bad ones. It's nitpicking because it was such a big win and it was such a good win, but I think you just have to look at it and say, okay, this is where things could have gone sour. The offensive line play and then the big plays on defense. It's not about getting out on third downs. Seattle was only 1 for 8 on third down. So Arizona did a great job of that. Where they struggled was stopping the big play of Seattle. A lot of that is Russell Wilson. But I think a lot of it had to do with just a flat inability to get to the quarterback and stop the big play from happening before it started.
And then there was the scary moment early in the 9 minutes left in the first half, and Mike Iupati goes to the ground, and they bring out an ambulance and they strap him onto a gurney, and they cart him, they take him off on an ambulance. That was a scary moment, and it's one of those moments where you're like, wait, no, we can't do that. And it was challenging after that, because then you've got Earl Watford, who hasn't played guard all year, playing at left guard. I wonder if, and luckily he was okay, and it doesn't look like he will probably miss a game this week. He's been cleared to practice, according to Bruce Arians on Sirius XM NFL Radio on Tuesday. But they really missed him. Then you could tell in the running game, Chris Johnson, 25 carries for 58 yards. I mean, that was Rashard Mendenhall-like, only but a bigger workload. But the offensive line, what happened there just can't happen. It's one thing, because Seattle has a very, very talented front. They can get after the passer. But what you can't have is the free runner, and you can't have Carson Palmer losing the ball in consecutive con- possessions, and that really just made things look bad for a moment. Bobby Massey, Jonathan Cooper. Now, yes, it's in Seattle. It's a tough place to play. It's a tough place to communicate. But it seems we seem to be every other week talking about, oh, there was that communication error again. And when are they going to get that fixed? When are they going to get it fixed?
I don't know if there's something that is fixed this year, simply because a lot of, outside of Dallas, and I'm trying to think, so I might be, you know, I might be something. So if you, you know, you think about it, let me know. But outside of Dallas, how many teams have, you know, what, two interior linemen turnover, and basically have played three different offensive line units this year, and have success, right? Like, I'm trying to think. Dallas is really the only one I can think of that didn't really miss a beat with their.
Well, and the Patriots really haven't, but that's because Tom Brady is amazing. It has nothing to do with the line. Yeah. The line is terrible. The line is trash. He just, I don't know how he does it. Because he seems to be the only one who can manage to do it and still be not lose a beat.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, it's so odd. And so you're going to have the mental lapses because of it. You know, Jonathan Cooper still doesn't know everything when the game's going on. He might know all the calls, but he doesn't know everything when the game's going on because this is his, like, 13th game ever. So he hasn't even played a full season in the first game still in live action. And then, you look at the Upati, Larson, now Watford shuffle. You look at the Watford Massey shuffle. Like, you're still only, you know, eight games or nine games now into this, you know, unit together. And they still haven't, you know, they've only had really eight and a half, or not even eight and a half, but eight games total of what the starting five did. So,
if you look back on a big picture level, while you nitpick and say these, and those were big things, those were big issues, and there seems to be a couple of communication errors that there seem to have once or twice a game, as it seems to be somewhat of a trend in a lot of these games. However, big picture, the Cardinals are a top 10 rushing team. Carson Palmer's been sacked 14 times this year, and they have a top 10 offense in every single category. So I guess the offensive line isn't bad. It's actually pretty good.
No, it's just like you said, it's just the mental lapses. Like, the mental lapses are just tough to deal with. And that's, that's the hard part. Like, there's mental lapses that cause issues. And I think all of us still hold our breath when Carson Palmer gets hit. Like, oh no. You know, and especially those hits. Like, those weren't like, oh, got tackled from behind. Those were, oh my, like, is anybody going to be able to get up from that? Like, those were shots he took. And, you know, and so I think that's kind of where your concern comes in.
For me, Palmer, it's not the big hits. It's the ones where he kind of gets twirled around, like the one where he ended up losing the ball and kicking it up in the air. When the legs start flying around, then you worry. Because that's when you can't get down right. You get something under you. You get flipped over, and you tear ligaments. And, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's worrisome, but there's not a ton of teams left on the schedule that can exploit them. There's one coming up, this week. And honestly, the Minnesota defense is very, very good. And Mike Zimmer is probably, if not the best, one of the top three defensive minds in the NFL. So he's gonna be ready for the Cardinals and what they're going to bring on a Thursday night. But outside of that, I mean, you look at it, you know Greg Williams is, and his defense is dangerous in that room. And then you have, of course, the Seattle game. But, I mean, Green Bay, San Francisco. I mean, yeah, they'll probably be a little better in San Francisco, but I don't know. And who do they have one other game that I'm going to see? Or is that
Philly?
Philadelphia. That's going to be an interesting one just because it's in Philadelphia.
And in December. It will be icy cold.
Yeah, so it's going to be freezing, and it's going to be outdoors, obviously. So that'll be an interesting one. And you know what? Their pass rush is phenomenal. So Philly may be able to do some things, but I don't know. When you look at it, you look at the schedule, and you're like, all right, like 7-2, you know, 7 games left.
But see what 1 week makes a difference? Just a week ago, before they started the second half of the schedule, they're like, oh, it's a brutal schedule. They beat Seattle at home. Guess what it looks like? Everything looks winnable now.
Well, and I think part of that is that Green Bay lost to Detroit at home. And then Cincy lost to Houston at home. Like, both those losses were worse than the Cardinals' worst loss. Not that that matters, it's because it's not, you know, there's no playoff rankings or anything like that. But both of those losses are worse than the Cardinals lost to Pittsburgh with Landry Jones throwing passes. I mean, that's just reality. Like, T.J. Yates comes in at your place and beats you. Like, that's embarrassing. You know, and so I think when you look at it overall, you say, okay, there's one team in the NFL that you look at and go, all right, they're clearly the best. And that's, you know, but I think everybody else, and they're beatable. You know, it's not like they're unbeatable. They might go undefeated, but they're definitely beatable. But everybody else, you go, they have major flaws that can come out at any game at any time. And I think you know, we saw Cincy, we've seen Arizona clearly, and we've seen Green Bay.
Another thing to look at for this game, I don't know if there's really anything left other than how things, but really nothing left in the terms of bad, but something I want to talk about a little bit is kind of game planning. And when I brought up the whole Patrick Peterson was only looked at, even only thrown at all once. But look at the other side of the ball. Carson Palmer, Bruce Arians. Ballsy combinations you're going to see. As ballsy a group as you're going to see. When Joe Hayden was the guy that they were talking about, Bruce Arians said, we don't go away from corners. We'd throw out Deion Sanders if that's what the coverage says. And that Carson Palmer said the same thing. What do? They challenge Richard Sherman. And the numbers for Sherman, he did not have a good game. They threw at him 8 times. 5 catches, 2 penalties, touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, they took advantage of Sherman. That's definitely different, right? Like, that's not something you see very often.
No, it was really, really good to see that, well, one, it just says, hey, we're not afraid of you. We have more talent, and we're going to beat you. So you might make a play, but we're going to make 2.
Yeah, and I think part of it is that, like you said, Arians and Palmer are really they're really ballsy, but they're really dumb too. Like, they do make really dumb decisions at times, and that's, you know, that's going to happen with guys like them. That
they get greedy.
Like to go
they get greedy. Yes, they do. Yeah, they get greedy. But that's what makes that combination so good, because it's the perfect. I mean, if you look at Bruce, Ben Roethlisberger was kind of the ideal guy for Carson Palmer is basically as good a quarterback to pair up with Bruce Arians. You could say a younger Peyton Manning with an arm, Ben Roethlisberger, these elite quarterbacks, and now you got Carson Palmer who has that Brett Favre mentality. But is quieter about it, and just has the guts to go about it. Imagine if Brett Favre had worked with Bruce Arians, just how much better he would have been. Because Arians has kind of really resurrected in a way. He's really remade Carson Palmer into the quarterback everyone hoped, believed he could be. And Carson Palmer has taken Arians' offense to a level nobody ever has.
Well, and part of it is, as you just hit, they're both very big in believing in themselves and what they're doing. And that when things go wrong, it's not Bruce Arians, it's not Carson Palmer. They both believe that, and that in a good way and in bad ways too. And we see the bad, we've seen the bad, and you know we see when bad stuff happens. But you know also the good is that you know the Seattle game, the games you know against Cleveland where he came back and threw some you know amazing throws, and that's who Carson Palmer is. And so you know you're gonna get bad, stupid decisions, and you're also gonna get you know prolonged periods of brilliance at this point.
So bottom line, the ceiling for this team, what is it? What is the ceiling for this team? Because if we've seen what they can do, they might not. There might not be a team who could consistently beat them. Especially now, New England's got some chinks in the armor. They lost Edelman. They lost Deion Lewis. Yes, Gronkowski's a thing. But you really look at the teams around the league. Who can beat the Cardinals if the Cardinals are playing at somewhere close to the potential? Their ceiling, I think, is they could be the best, complete, most complete team in football. The Bengals look like they could be. The Panthers are, you know, you don't really believe in the Panthers, and I don't want to take it away because the Cardinals were that team last year. But you really look at the Bengals, you look at the Patriots, and after that, you're like, based on what Arizona can do, is there another team that could really beat them other than St. Louis and when they play a perfect game plan?
No, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you look at it, I go back to what we talked about before. I think that their floor should be the NFC Championship game. And ceilings are tough because that's taking, you know, that's putting a lot of pressure on them, saying, look, if you don't do this, you're not, you know, you fail. But I think the floor that we should expect from this team at this point is an NFC Championship game up there. You know, as you said, maybe Green Bay gets it all back together. You know, and their mid-season slump was the spot where they slumped. You know, or maybe they don't. When you look at Carolina, maybe they slump at the end of the season and play in the playoff. There's a lot to all these teams. And the one thing I'll say about Carolina is this. When you can run the football and play great defense, and they do both of those things extremely well, you're tough to beat. And the one thing we haven't seen Carolina have to do is play from, you know, the negative spot. So that means really down. Not just like, oh, they're down a touchdown. Because if they're down a touchdown, they're not too much. But if they're down, you know, what happens if they're down 21-3 or something like that? How are they going to play, and do they have the talent to do, you know, to stop them?
They got Ted Ginn. Everything's good, right? Ted Ginn, he's a bomb.
and that's kind of where, you know, I think where all of us Cardinals fans are like, how is this team doing this?
Because when Ted Ginn's like their number one receiver, outside of the actual number one receiver with Greg Olsen, but when you look at receivers and you're seeing Ted Ginn, who is like important, and you're like, no, that they're not real. They can't be real. It's Ted Ginn.
Exactly. And so, but like I said, I think we should expect with help the floor of an NFC Championship team. Obviously, we'd like to see them win and go on Super Bowl and win Super Bowl. But when you're talking about the Final Four, anything can happen, right? Like we saw Minnesota 15-1, perfect kicker all year, missed a field goal kick, and then, you know, Atlanta goes to the Super Bowl. Your play is different. You know, obviously everybody knows New England and the Giants. So anything can happen. But I think to get to that point, we have to expect two things. One, Arizona has to take care of their business. They get Cincinnati this week. Joe Goodberry, who is a writer for, what's the SB Nation Cincy site?
Cincy Jungle.
Cincy Jungle. I don't know if he's still there, but he was there previously. and he's an excellent follow on Twitter this week if you're a Cardinals fan and want to get to know the Bengals. He has an amazing stat on Andy Dalton. And in Andy Dalton's career of what they call uncommon opponents, which means they don't play each other yearly and they haven't played each other within a year's time span. So, you know, clearly, like, common opponents for the Cardinals are, you know, the NFC West.
Basically, NFC, so other conference opponents.
Yeah. So in uncommon opponents, Andy Dalton's 25-3 as a quarterback. Ooh. He's only lost 3 games to opponents that they do not see regularly in Cincinnati. But on the flip side, he's like now 14-18 against common opponents. And his like quarterback rating is over 100 in uncommon opponents, and it's 77. And it's just it's an astounding stat.
That sounds almost exactly like the Cardinals, who have been, like, against the AFC, completely obliterated
them. And so it's
them.
An astounding stat to hear. And then you kind of just go, okay, so the Cardinals.
Did I lose you? You there, Seth? Oh, he was making a salient point. The call has not disconnected, so he will join us in a moment. The point I was going to make with that tidbit is that makes 2 very good matchups because the Cardinals have been nothing short of completely dominant against the AFC, the other conference. The teams they don't see a whole lot. Bruce Arians, he's completely dismantled the AFC overall. The NFC West, the conference opponents, the division opponents, have been the troublemakers for Arizona, understandably so. But the NFC West is not as good as it has been overall. The Cardinals are the only team with a winning record. But this game, and I brought it up in the show last week, this 4 games, if the Cardinals really can take over the NFL with these 4 weeks. One, beating Seattle, that really stomps Seattle out of the picture. Now, the Rams have kind of taken themselves out of the picture a bit with losing the last couple of weeks, but there's still the potential of them holding a tiebreak over the Cardinals if the Cardinals lose to them in St. Louis. The next 3 games, the 2 more important ones are obviously San Francisco and St. Louis, but the Cardinals have a chance this week to have another statement game. No, Cincinnati's not playing as well as they have been, but that could make 2 straight primetime statement games where they take down the 2-time NFC champs, a team that was within a play of winning a 2nd Super Bowl in a row, to a team that was who ideally what would have been undefeated on national TV on Sunday Night Football on the biggest stage. Basically say to the nation, hey Cardinals, the Cardinals are for real. They're not going to be quietly dominating the NFC. They will have made a statement, and I don't think there would be any place in the world. The league has to pay attention. The league will have to pay attention to Carson Palmer and the Cardinals, and I can't wait. In terms of what's going on this week, that'll give a wrap for our Cardinals show. I haven't gotten Seth back on the line, so I don't know what exactly happened. If he just hit mute or if his phone died. The phone line that I've got connected has not ended yet. But that will come bring our all Cardinals show to a close. I do have lined up Scott Bantel from CincyJungle.com. If all goes well, if it goes well, supposed to, I will have a preview show by the end of the week. On behalf of Seth Cox, this is Jess Root, and this is Revenge of the Birds Radio, the All Cardinals Show. Thank you so much for listening. Follow us. Go to RevengeOfTheBirds.com. You know how to get a hold of us. Twitter, Facebook, RevengeOfTheBirds.com, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, all that good stuff. Thank you for listening, Cardinals fans, and go Big Red. You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.
It's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe iced range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.